from the Atlantic to the Pacific, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from the canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we are pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. I'm your host, Vance Pollock, and this is Joshua P. Warren speaking of strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We have assembled the finest team of reporters and most intriguing guests. We are the favorite program of hootenoggers, wendigos, skunk apes, and donkey devils, not to mention benevolent space brothers. So keep it tuned right here. This hour, yeah, Missy last hour dropped the name John Lyerly, and we've got a lot of listeners out there. I mean, of the SOS fans that I bump into out and about around Asheville, the one ghostly figure that they mention more often than any other is Sheriff John Lyerly, because he is so closely connected with Joshua's Museum.
Oh, yeah.
I would say that, especially in the original museum space down there behind Pax Tavern on Marjorie Street in the little stone building there, John Lyerly was the ghostly figure.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and you've heard the tale of Kat, who was a docent there in the museum, and her encounter one Sunday afternoon with John Lyerly's ghost. She turned to walk out of the building and thought she had bumped into some man who had walked in behind her while she was tidying up in the back. And she turned around to apologize, "Excuse me, sir," and saw a dark shadow fade, evaporate before her eyes. And she had physically bumped into it. There was nothing there in that back room but a row of chairs. There was nothing that she could have bumped into like that.
Oh, no. No, she thought she'd, you know, just forgotten to lock the front door when she was, you know, on her way back, like you said, to tidy things up and close it down for the evening. Yeah, when she called me, I was the first person that she called.
And she was rattled.
She was very rattled. But then, you know, and it was good that she called Joshua after she talked to me, because then you called him later.
Right. At the time she had this encounter, we didn't know. Or rather, at the same time she had this encounter, we were learning that Sheriff John Lyerly had committed suicide in that building on that date.
Mm-hmm.
Was it January 24th, 2011?
It was.
Wow. Anyway, my friend Richard Russell, I call him Rick. Some other people call him Rick, too. But on the cover of his books, his name is Richard Russell. He's the author of Robert Henry, Western Carolina Patriot. It's a good history of the Sulphur Springs area, which was the first big resort area around Asheville. Sulphur Springs, during the high summer tourist season, there would be more people staying out there at the hotel at Sulphur Springs than there were actually in Asheville proper, because Sulphur Springs in West Asheville, it's in what's now the Malvern Hills community or neighborhood. Sulphur Springs during the 1800s, before the railroad came to Asheville, it was a place that these wealthy planters from the low country of South Carolina would come up here by stagecoach to the mountains, you know, for the fresh air. And Rick has some interesting stories about some of the people that hung around Sulphur Springs back in those days, and not least among them, Robert Henry, who was he was one of the first school teachers in Buncombe County. As a young man, actually as a boy, 16 years old, he was at the Battle of Kings Mountain during the Revolution. So that goes way back. So at 16 years old, he was bayoneted through the leg at Kings Mountain during the American Revolution. And he lived up until the time of the American Civil War. So here's a figure whose life spanned that period between the American Revolution and the American Civil War. Robert Henry, Western Carolina Patriot. That's a very fascinating book my buddy Richard Russell wrote. Rick is also a musician, a poet, and a songwriter. I'm going to read you a poem that Rick wrote after I shared the story of John Lyerly with him and sent him some newspaper clippings about John Lyerly's death. Was many a body that lost the chase and hung from an old oak tree, despite the pleas of desperate men, it was easy to foresee. When the hounds stopped a-running, the conclusion was foregone. Never was one that could break away from the hounds of Sheriff John. John Lyerly was a notorious manhunter, and he had a pack of hounds, and if he was after you, you might as well just hang it up. You better just turn around and throw your hands up. When the hounds of Sheriff John were set loose upon the trail, they always found their man, but was it justice that prevailed? Listen close. About the time of the waning of the day, you may hear the hounds of Sheriff John begin to howl and bay. Old Joe took the lead, and not a scent that he could not track. And those who tried to get away found no turning back. They began to shake and sweat, and their hearts began to pound when they heard the sounds of Sheriff John's pack of howling hounds. When a gentle hand from high above took the one that he had wed, the soul of Sheriff John was gone, and he may as well be dead. A pearl-handled pistol could put an end to grief and pain, so on a cold, dark winter's day, he shot a bullet in his brain. To always uphold the law was the oath that he had sworn, and though he died in 24, still his promise will be born. In a long black overcoat, he makes his rounds near the Buncombe jail, while the hounds of Sheriff John cry out their lonesome wail.
Wow.
That's a good poem. Rick wrote that back in 2012, and I've got a surprise for Speaking of Strange listeners. Rick has just sent me a demo and given me permission to play the song, Hounds of Sheriff John. So when you're ready, Sam, let's give it a listen.
Was many a body that lost the chase, swung from the hanging tree, despite the pleas of desperate men, was easy to foresee. When the hounds stopped running, the conclusion was foregone. Never was one that could break away from the hounds of Sheriff John. Old Joe took the lead and nothing he could not track. Those who tried to get away found no turning back. They began to shake and sweat, hearts began to pound when they heard Sheriff John's pack of howling hounds. When the hounds of Sheriff John were set loose upon the trail, they always found their man. Was it justice that prevailed? Listen close. About the time of the waning of the day, you may hear the hounds of Sheriff John begin to howl and bay. Always eyes upon the lawn was the oath that he had sworn. Though he died in 24, his promise will be born. In a long black overcoat, he makes his rounds with a bunk on jail. While the hounds, Sheriff John, pray out there alone somewhere. When the hounds of Sheriff John were set loose upon the trail, that he always found their men. Was it justice that prevailed? Listen close about the time and the waning of the day. You may hear the hounds of Sheriff John begin to howl and bay. You may hear the hounds of Sheriff John begin to howl and bay.
That's the Scatterlings. They're a new group here around Asheville, the Scatterlings. They're working on an album's worth of music, a CD's worth of music, however you want to measure a collection of songs in this modern era. The Scatterlings, they should be done with that June or July. So look them up on Facebook, the Scatterlings. I like that word. I like that song. The Hounds of Sheriff John, Elfie Kornfeld on vocal there. Elfie Kornfeld, well known in the Americana music business around here. So what do you think, guys? Traditional song hit the spot?
Oh yeah,
I think so.
A story you can relate to.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And for around here, music fits for around here.
I mean, I like the art of telling the John Lyerly story. It's always a little different. I've told it a dozen times or more, and probably at least half a dozen times on radio, probably three or four times here on Speaking of Strange. But Sheriff John Lyerly's story put to song like that. I think a song, as we were talking about King Arthur and sealing some of these traditions, folklore, and myths into the culture, a song is what it takes to do it. So here we go, folks, and you heard it for the first time here on Speaking of Strange, The Hounds of Sheriff John. It's a ballad about our own Sheriff John Lyerly, who we kind of feel like we know.
Well, we do. We made him human again. We talk to him every day. He became our friend. Things were a little rocky in the beginning, but we became friends, and I believe he looked out for us.
We hope you like your song, John. We'll be right back. Speaking of Strange, I'm Vance Pollock. I'm in this room. I'm locked in this room with Shelley Wright and Missy Hill and Sam the Animal still. Shelley Wright, Missy Hill, and Sam the Animal Steel. That's like a nursery rhyme.
It is.
We got to hear the Hounds of Sheriff John's debut. I'm still pretty excited about that because I know, like I've showed you the lyrics there, Rick's got under the title there, copyright Richard Russell 2012. We're going back to 2012 lot today.
Yeah.
And it's taken 5 years? To have that put to, well, it's, they had put it to music. Rick had another group called the, gosh, I can't even think what he called that group. They had a name for a little while. But anyway, some guys that he was jamming with, you know, just playing Americana, bluegrass sort of stuff. Sugar Hollow. And I saw Sugar Hollow play the Hounds of Sheriff John down in Fairview a year or two back. But this is the first time that they've ever recorded a version of it that Rick said, okay, I'm confident enough that this is a good enough version to share with the public. Because he's had other demos that he did with, like, Sugar Hollow, and I think he's done another demo with Elfie and some of the folks that are in the Scatterlings. But he was like, no, it's not ready. It's not ready yet. It's not ready. So he sent me this one earlier this week, and I said, Rick, it's ready. And now's the time. And since Missy confirmed, you know, I didn't say anything to you about John Lyerly,
and you
got on the phone with me when we were setting to confirm to get you on the show and everything, and you brought John Lyerly up again. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely... Definitely synchronicity.
And now we're going to go back to 2011, right?
Let's go back to the old jail.
The day that I had lunch at Kathmandu. And there was even some synchronicity building up to Kathmandu, of course. That song, I think I'm going to Kathmandu.
That's some Bob Seger or something.
Right, yeah. So I met Lauren and Kat at Kathmandu and had lunch. And then I came over to the old jail and saw you there and... That's where the synchronicities started to happen.
Right. I was deep into this law enforcement research at the time. We had just learned about Sheriff Lyerly, so I had started to accumulate every photograph from the early 1900s for the first couple decades of law enforcement around Asheville. And I think I had found a couple more group photos that may have had John in them, but when you get some of these 100-year-old photos, they may not have the names on them. In most cases, they don't. So here is a nice photograph of Asheville Police Department, 1920. And I know that Lyerly's brother, Kelly Lyerly was a chief then, and John Lyerly was he was a captain with the police department at that time because he wasn't elected sheriff until 1920. So he was with the city department and then he was with the county and back and forth. So I know that he's got to be in some of these photos and I'm just trying to guess which one of these guys is Lyerly. I had another photo, and the interesting thing about this photo, Shelley, is the gentleman that's sitting on the right, a young man named Ed McConnell, and we went out to Beaver Dam, and I stood at Ed McConnell's grave and hollered back up to you while you stood at John Lyerly's grave. The last time we went there on John's death anniversary, I walked down to Ed McConnell's grave. Ed McConnell was a young Asheville police officer who was killed in the line of duty. He was a fallen officer. He had apprehended a man and was taking him, of course, by wagon in those days, I think it was 1912, to the jail, and the man got a pistol out from under his shirt and shot Ed McConnell. Yeah,
that is so sad.
It was sad, but Ed McConnell's buried out there at Beaver Dam as well, just down the hill from John Lyerly, like I say, shouting distance, because we did that experiment where we went to John Lyerly's grave, and I walked down to Ed McConnell's grave and shouted back up, and we tried to get some EVPs and things. But in this photo with Ed McConnell on the right there, it's a group of gentlemen, and I showed Missy this photo that day that she visited in the old county building there on Marjorie Street. And I said, do any of these faces, you know, any of these guys look like they have a message for you? And she pointed to a gentleman that was standing just off-center there by the name of N.A. Collins, I believe, was his name. Anyway, Captain Collins. And, you know, he had a fine mustache and was kind of an interesting-looking guy. And I said, yeah, that's Captain Collins, and I don't know a whole lot about him, but just on your hunch, the fact that you laid your finger down on him, Missy, I'm gonna take a look. And here's that date synchronicity again. Some genealogists and some history buffs might know about the website Find a Grave. It's a website for gravers. I'm a graver. I'm a ghoul. I go out into the cemeteries and I write down names and dates off of the gravestones. You would be amazed at all the grave sites that have been cataloged by volunteers. I've cataloged a couple hundred graves on findagrave.com. So I go there and I look up Captain Collins' gravesite on Find a Grave. Guess what? Something like 2 days before, someone had posted a photograph of Captain Collins, and the username was right there, and the username was Catman.
Right. Yeah. You can't make this up.
And Missy had just come from lunch at the Catman Do restaurant. With Cat, our own cat.
Right.
So here's a, and we like cats.
Yes.
So
love
there's
cats.
more synchronicity. We all like cats. But this fellow whose user profile on Find a Grave is Catman has posted a picture of Captain Collins. And I wrote to him and said, what's the connection here? I believe it was a great grandson. He said, I have one more Asheville law enforcement photo. It's a picture of my great uncle, forget his name, Sluter, I believe his last name, Robert Sluter, maybe, my great uncle, with a group of men, and they were the Asheville motorcycle cops. Well, if you know the Sheriff John Lyerly story, you know that it was a couple of motorcycle cops who heard the quote-unquote backfire. They heard the pop in the garage and went in to investigate, smelled the gun smoke, and walked to the back and found him in the back of the storage room laying on the ground bleeding out. And this man sent me a photograph of the Asheville motorcycle cops, including the men who had discovered John Lyerly's body in the back of the garage. So, yeah, it is a small world, and these paranormal things swirl in ever smaller circles. You can't escape it once you're kind of pulled into the energy, like Missy is. Our guest this hour, Missy Hill. Our guest this evening, Missy, you're welcome to stick around for the Dark 30 if you dare.
Oh, boy.
We might get to hear a monkey story from you. Everybody likes stories about bad monkeys.
It's not even from Florida.
not even a Florida monkey story. But yeah,
I do have a Florida story, though.
Well,
it's not a Dark 30.
Hang on to that. Oh, you have a decent Florida story?
Yes, I do.
Are you feeling like you need to tell a nice Florida story?
Yeah,
for a change?
Yeah.
Just ring my bell.
Because I just rang the bell.
Shelly's kind of proprietary.
I rang the bell.
Shelly is like, how dare you reach over and ring my bell?
Well, this is a paranormal story because we were talking about ghostly activity, and I'm trying to think of when the date was of this because I wrote it down.
Was it a personal experience?
It was a personal experience that Ron and I had when we went down to Key Largo years ago that we actually were by this plaque and
we're kind of late to get into another story.
Oh, it's quick.
But how quick? Because we
real
got music
quick.
Starting right now. Okay.
Putting my hands on this plaque and hearing this whoosh, we both heard it, and it turns out that there was a hurricane that went through there Labor Day of 1935, and you could still feel the energy because of all the names on this plaque.
Okay, the Key Largo hurricane of 1935. And you were there some
years ago.
70 years later, and when you put your hand on the plaque, you could hear the sound?
Yes.
Of the wind rushing?
Yeah, it sounded like a train. Yeah.
Fascinating. Sometimes makes you question whether there really is such thing as time and space.
I don't think so.
We'll be right back. Speaking of strange. People don't change, even when they die sometimes. We think that about Sheriff John Lyerly sometimes, that he's still a cantankerous old cuss. But he's our friend John now. And what about that? You just can't time Missy Hill walking into the old museum there and pointing to a picture of Captain N.A. Collins. And then I go on the internet and find that just within days, his great-grandson had posted his photograph and had another photograph when I contacted him that he had not shared of the motorcycle cops who actually found Sheriff John Lyerly's body. So it's a very, very small world, and these psychic circles, it's almost like once you stir something up, the energy is going to keep swirling until you get to the end of all of this, right? Until you tie up some loose ends. And that's why I keep pursuing this Mississippi thing. I was telling Missy that I think that we need to run with the Mississippi ghost narrative because it's something that's genuine enough. Shelley and I are seeing it again and again. And the fact that that story resonated with you, Missy, when you were listening to the episode from a couple weeks back, the fact that that resonated with you. Mississippi is a dark, strange sort of place. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned being there and feeling the sense that you had, you know, stepped out of a time machine.
Exactly.
I said that about Greenwood, Mississippi, that it's about like any small American town in the 1960s. It had that vibe very much. And like when I was kicking around in Mississippi, it was in the late 90s. So again, it bears on what you mentioned, Missy, that it was kind of before the boom of portable devices. People weren't walking around absorbed in their smartphones and everything like that. It was in a more sort of old fashioned time.
It was old fashioned. Yeah. I was in Florence, Mississippi, and there was a dome shaped restaurant called Jerry's Catfish House that actually looks a lot like the Light Center and the Integraton out in Mount Shasta. The Light Center's here in Black Mountain, and the, like I said, the Integraton. So going into this place and watching people eat was like a ritual. I mean, you could almost feel, you could see the heat waves of time. I mean, it was a hot, humid day. They had their own, you know, catfish farm and this sort of thing, and it was interesting.
Let me jump in on the domed building note. Shelley, did you know this, that Buckminster Fuller, he's a strange guy. Just Google that name, Buckminster Fuller. Buckminster Fuller designed and patented several of his geodesic domes when he was teaching out at Black Mountain College. So there is that very regional, that local connection to the geodesic domes. And like you were saying, Missy, there's the Light Center out above Black Mountain. I guess it's on Highway 9 between Black Mountain and Bat Cave. And the Integratron, that's near Giant Rock, California. Mm-hmm. It's very closely associated with the early UFO contactee movement. So you're talking about this catfish place in Florence, Mississippi, that's in a roundhouse.
Yeah,
like this.
And basically because there were no cell phone towers or this kind of thing, whatever energy was locked in place from previous timelines, I'd say the 50s in the time of segregation, you could feel that because people willingly, you know, blacks were on one side and whites were on another, and nobody, you know, said you're sitting here or there. It's just the way it was. And of course, this was on a Sunday, so it was after church and people were in their Sunday best. It was weird. It was like going into a movie. It was like, I don't know, that Oprah Winfrey movie or, you know, some
Driving Miss Daisy or something.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about, having traveled through the deep south. Shelley, you've been down there more recently. When you were driving around, did you stop at any restaurants or go through any small towns that felt like they were trapped in another time? Or did you feel like it was all pretty modern by now?
It might have just been the route that we took. It was pretty modern and you know, Patty and I were kind of lost in our own little world, chatting back and forth. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we would just look, you know, long enough to see if we could see any monsters running through the swamps or something. That's pretty much it. But New Orleans had a different feel to it.
They say that New Orleans even feels different now as compared to before Katrina, because there was so much renovation and so much cleanup necessary after the devastation of Hurricane Katrina. I haven't been back to New Orleans since Katrina, so I need to get back down there and see if it feels different, see if the patina is still there, because New Orleans used to have a really old energy. When I stood on the street in New Orleans, it felt like something very old, older than humans.
Right.
There was an
older
energy
than dirt.
There. Yeah, there was as old as swamp muck, maybe, is the thing. It felt like a very humid, swampy, dark vibe. But anyways, and Mississippi, I don't know what the connection is, but we're going to keep feeding the Mississippi storyline, the Mississippi narrative.
This is what I asked you. Is it because people like the mountains so well and then they bring the remains here and scatter the remains? Does that have something to do with why?
We've still got to take care of that issue. I have a badge from some human remains, some cremains, they call them, the ashes of a cremation that I stumbled across at Buck Springs Lodge 5 years ago. And I took the badge because I do that sort of thing, because I'm like, okay, here's the badge in a pile of human ashes. I'm just going to pick that up and put it in my pocket. Was it a good idea in retrospect?
Probably
maybe
not.
I was actually feeling a lot of, since discussing it a couple of weeks ago, I've been feeling a lot of negative energy and feeling bad about that. It's in the museum. It's in Joshua's museum in the.
I might need to see it before it goes back to see if that's the same guy that knocked me down on the trail.
Well, we can probably arrange that. People want to go to hauntedashville.com and book a tour. If you haven't taken one or you haven't taken one recently, Josh came back into town last fall and they remodeled and moved and fixed up the museum space. I mean, I would pay, if I was not privy to these things, I would pay $15 to see the renovations done on the museum. And you can get into the museum at the tail end of a walking tour if you do a Haunted Asheville tour. HauntedAsheville.com. Book the walking tour. Tad McDivitt, some other great guides. I hear they're busy and they're always a good time. And then they'll take you into the basement of the Masonic Temple, where you can see the Joshua P. Warren collection, Joshua P. Warren's Mystery Museum. And there's I don't even think there's a sign for it, but I'm going to tell you what to look for if you go. I'll leave it there for another week or two before me and Shelley get back up to Buck Spring, because I have a feeling this is leading me back up there, that I need to get right with the spirits, and I need to take this badge, this tag from those human remains back up there. There's a box with a sticker on the front from a mortuary, a little cardboard box, about the size of a shoebox, and the sticker on the front is from a mortuary in Florida. That's the ashes that I dumped off Buck Springs Lodge later. But on that little stand, on the shelf next to this cardboard box with the mortuary sticker on the front of it, there's a little silver tag, looks about like a dog tag, with a number on it, and the funeral home from Tupelo, Mississippi. Yeah, that was the connection. That's how I knew that those ashes were from Tupelo. And Missy, you and I had talked about this. We don't know if those people chose to have their ashes dumped up there on the parkway just because they had vacationed here and they knew it was a beautiful place, as good a place as any for a final resting place, or if there was a personal connection. I know I spoke to a lady whose grandfather grew up at the Zalandia Estate, and her mother grew up in Asheville as well, and she brought her mother's ashes back to Asheville and sprinkled them up there on the side of Bowcatcher. But her grandfather's name was Philip Zeeland Rogers. Her father was named after Sir Philip Henry, who owned the Zealandia Estate, and his middle name Zeeland after the Zealandia Estate. So how do you get more associated with the roots or the origins of an estate like Zealandia, a legendary estate like that, than your father is the caretaker? That was the case. This woman's great-grandfather was the caretaker of Zealandia, and her grandfather was born and raised on that estate, and was actually named for the owner, Philip Henry, and the estate, Zealandia, Philip Zeeland Henry. And his daughter, then when she passed away, her daughter brought her back up here and scattered her ashes on Bowcatcher. Kind of gives a new meaning to the name Asheville.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, it does.
I brought up a couple weeks ago, Asheville is one of the capitals of ash scattering. Well, think about it. If you had to choose where your ashes were scattered, wouldn't you want them scattered right here in the land of Skye? I think that's a fine idea. And there's plenty of people who agree, but I need to make things right with those Mississippi spirits. So any suggestions, hit me up, let me know. We'll be right back. You're listening to Speaking of Strange.
Songs. I wake your mother, she's sleeping there, right by your side. In her right hand, a silver dagger. She said that you can be my bride. Your daddy is a handsome devil, got a chain 5 miles long on every link. A heart has dangled of another woman, he's loved and wronged.
The final minutes of hour two. Speaking of strange, time flies when you're having fun, and chatting it up a little bit. Missy Hill, an old friend, is our guest here on Speaking of Strange tonight. Missy, you've seen a lot of strange stuff, and you can vouch for a lot of the foolishness. Well, a lot of the stuff that people might accuse us of making up, you've witnessed. You can sign a sworn affidavit to most of the stories that we've told here tonight.
I have a tulpa story.
Oh, do tell. We like tulpas.
Okay, I know. Well, because we're talking about places, one, I wanted to bring up another on the road story when Ron and I were on the road as truck drivers.
Right.
A place we used to like to go was Hannibal, Missouri, the home of Mark Twain, Sam Clemens. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have this museum anymore, but at one time they had a wax museum, and it really felt like, when you look at the wax museum, that because people project energy onto Mark Twain, it felt like it was alive and it actually looked like it was breathing.
The Mark Twain wax figure in Hannibal, Missouri
looked like it was breathing. Yeah.
So is that what you're tying in with the tulpa? That what a lot of people may not. We haven't talked about tulpas enough on the show that people may not even have that term in their vocabulary. A tulpa is basically a psychic thought form that has been generated or empowered or energized by giving thought to it.
Right.
And there have been a number of experiments. Josh, when he was working on The Apparition, there was a Hollywood movie a couple of years ago, The Apparition, and in the Blu-ray DVD extras, the Blu-ray edition extras, there's actually a documentary. Shelley's in that documentary, right?
I am.
And Josh over at the lab, the Lemur Lab, he tried to explain to those the producers of the film how plasmas and things like that may be manipulated through mental energy. So this is fascinating.
I'm trying to imagine.
Have you been to other wax museums? I've been to the wax museum in St. Augustine and places like that.
There was something really weird about this place, and they even had their own little, haunted house thing in the back of it. It was just real. It was really weird. It felt like whatever, maybe because there was not much going on in the town, that people created Mark Twain being alive. They wanted him to be alive so bad that all their thoughts projected onto this wax figure. I was able to pick it up.
And the fact that it was his hometown, and maybe a lot of the people there did feel a personal connection. They were projecting this energy, but you could sense that sort of energy when you were.
Yes, and then there was even, it was so strong it had a discharge with a lightning storm when we left. It was weird, and it was on Hill Street. And our name's Hill.
Right. So you, of course, had felt a personal connection. But it's not that way anymore.
No, because they got rid of the museum. It was sad. Last time we were there, there was no more museum.
I wonder what they did with the wax figure. I mean, because
a
good wax figure is.
They had some leftover things. Like there was a Yoda. There was a bunch. It was just, it's kind of a cool, eclectic, weird, you'd love it.
It sounds like an interesting town.
Yeah.
Hannibal,
I know
Missouri.
They have a steampunk festival there, like, once in a while.
Is it Missouri or Missouri?
Missouri.
Missouri. I think the locals call it Missouri. Kind of like New Orleans.
It's not connected
to
Hannibal Lecter either. It's not connected to Hannibal Lecter.
Oh, my goodness. That's strange. We like a good tulpa story because there was a time when almost every episode of Speaking of Strange, there was a tulpa reference because we were deep into that research, and it's still fascinating. The thought forms in different belief systems around the world. In some of the Indian traditions, they describe, and I think maybe that's where the term tulpa comes from. Wonder if your etymologist could do that. I could probably find out a little bit more, but something about the tulpa that's just engaging, and I think that a we've been talking about folklore. We've been talking about historical figures in the Asheville area and giving life and feeding energy to them through the culture, through the music, through the poetry, the literature, the folklore, the myth, building the myth of people like Sheriff John Lyerly and Robert Henry of the Sulphur Springs brings to mind one of the stories I'm going to have to get Rick to tell, the legend of Robert Henry's grave site and how he is often seen sitting at his own graveside. He's buried far out in the country, a few counties over, and it's on a parcel near an old homestead. And very often people will say they go out back where the graves are and they see Robert Henry, this old man, sitting at his own grave.
Weird.
Speaking of strange, that's what we're about. The Dark 30 Hour coming up.